Are you a big brain of the beautiful game? Prove it with the great new app that'll test your football knowledge to the limit. Name That Player. Download the Name That Player app today and race against the clock to identify the Premier League players purely from a list of the clubs they've played for. Put your football knowledge to the ultimate test with the Name That Player app. Available right now for iOS and Android from the App Store and Google Play. Name That Player. Can you beat the best?
Shoot the Defense, the best podcast in the world. We're out here.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence on Radio Football in association with Name That Player app. If you're bored and you need to sit on the toilet and play something apart from yourself, get Name That Player app. It's fantastic. I promise you, you'll love it. You absolutely love it. Anyway, I'm your host, Stel, and it's an impromptu show. I kind of sent a WhatsApp to these guys. I said, you're not doing anything tonight. I'm doing a show after Love Island. And they're like, yay, let's do it. So I've got three co-hosts with me. Number one, Mr. Kojo. Kojo, welcome back, mate. How you doing?
I'm good, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good. All good. Were you surprised with the ending of Love Island?
I found it flipping hilarious. I loved it because it's about time my namesake sort of just grabbed the balls and said, yeah, fuck you. So, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Short and sweet. Lovely. That's right. Co-host number two, the founder of Radio Football, Connor Dunford. How you doing, Connor?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. You don't watch Love Island, do you?
Oh, so I'm a religious watcher. Really? This is more like my fourth year.
Wow.
I'm deep in.
I did not know this.
Yeah, well, me and Kojo have our little conversations about it.
So go on, is it going to be Tommy and Molly May that's going to win it this year?
I hope Ovi wins it. I really do. I just want the only person, fuck the woman, he can win it on his own. He can have the 50k to himself.
Yeah, he's all right. He's all right. I kind of thought that he was going to win it with Anna, but then she turned heel, didn't she? She turned.
Man, fuck Anna. I would still.
There you go. And the lovely voice you just heard there was Mr. Double D. How you doing, my friend?
We're scared of guys, you right?
Yeah, all good. All good.
Good.
And
good.
What are your views on Love Island this year?
To be honest, it's just a little bit of escapism, to be honest, because I think the show peaked 2 years ago. I think this season has really struggled, but they got a decent bit of eye candy in there, so otherwise I would have probably given up on it, but... yeah, it's something to watch. If there was still more football on, then I wouldn't make it apparently. But as the football competition has slowly come to end bit by bit, I've been good to it to the last couple of weeks. But yeah, I don't think anything could really top 2017, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, just clearing my throat there. It sounded like I was using a vibrator. Yeah, you mentioned the football tournaments that occurred, three of them obviously. There was AFCON, which is obviously still going on. The final's going to be between Senegal and Algeria, Copa America, and another one which I don't really want to talk about because I can't be bothered. I ain't got the energy for that at the moment. For me, why would I want to talk about it when the whole world has been talking about this incredible event? This incredible event that even some podcasts have done profiles of seven magnificent players from that competition. Ooh, yeah, go fuck yourselves, you politically correct wankers. listen, I'm not going to make any bones about it, but What did you make of those three competitions? I haven't really been following AFCON, to be fair. I think because I've had other things to do, unfortunately. But it just seems to me by the Twitter timeline and the way that people have gone on about it, and I saw some of the Copa America games, which are quite underwhelming. That's the general feeling I've got this summer. It hasn't been a great summer of football, has it?
I'll kick off with this one. Copa America, I kind of bypassed me a little bit because the times and stuff like that. From what I saw, it was just what you expected, really, wasn't it? Argentina to flop and Brazil to go on and win it relatively comfortably. AFCON's been really good for me. Normally, it's obviously in January, which is a killer because it takes away some of the Premier League players, and let's be honest, some of the best players in the Premier League are from African nations. So it's been good to finally sit down and watch it, and kind of, like I spoke about this on the Radio Football Show a few weeks ago, you look at the scouting network that you could have in Africa and some of the quality you could pull out of there before kind of the teams like Salzburg and Vienna and stuff get them. It could be a good for teams in the lower level of the Premier League, like Southampton, we signed Gineppo, to scout some of these African stars, because it's a big continent, a lot of players, a lot of talent out there. So that's been very good. Women's World Cup, I watched two games. That's it. And I've got nothing to say on it.
Thank you very much, excellent. You've done me a favour there. Kojo, what did you make of the competitions that we just mentioned? I know that you're a big Ghana fan. They let you down, didn't they?
I wouldn't go that far. But, they did exactly what I expected of them. Yeah, the group stages didn't lose. So that was case in point. But for me, I wouldn't take it as a personal victory. But when Ghana got knocked out, obviously, as you would expect, a lot of Nigerians started to come and talk trash and way towards my direction. So I just told them basically, you better win the competition then, because if you don't, I don't care if it's the finals or the semifinals where you lose, you are going to be in the same boat as us. You lost. And I literally spent yesterday just tweeting and messaging people, Maris, full stop, and just left it there. Let them vent after, and just kept on typing Maris, full stop, because, that's all that was needed. I think the knockout competitions in general have been good. The team that I expected to go through to the final, Senegal, there. I said that on DD 40 Factory a couple of weeks ago before the competition started. Copa America, the only game I enjoyed was Brazil, Argentina. That was a fun game to watch, as it really is. And the Women's World Cup, the only game I enjoyed really was USA versus France. That felt like a good toe-to-toe game that excited the fans and people watching at home. But apart from that, I think you're right. No competition's really been so exciting that you can just sit there and say, I had more excitement watching Wimbledon in the 2 weeks than I did watching any football this summer.
Well, D, I know you're a bit of a women's football connoisseur now, because I've been listening to the D&D Footy Factory, and you do know your women's football. Sounds like it, anyway.
I wouldn't say a connoisseur, but...
Listen, I'm not going to lie to you. Every podcast I've listened to that started talking about that event, I've hit that fast-forward button. This isn't just me sounding like a misogynist. I don't. I love women, Of course I do. But it's just that it's almost as if it's been rammed down our throats, and it's like, you will like it, you will listen to what we have to say about it, and one way or the other, we're going to get equal pay.
They're corny, and I think we spoke about this, but obviously not on whilst recording this, in the group and messaging each other, etc., and talking to each other over the phone over the last few weeks. The corniest part of it has been the social media side of things. I found some of the analysis decent about the game with Gabby Logan and Alex Scott, etc.
That's their job.
So long and whatnot. I've been okay with the analysis side, but
yeah, but that's their job. They're meant to be good analysts.
But it's the social media.
It's like congratulating a postman for putting the letters through the box.
All the fancy graphics and whatnot. I've not been sure about. But let's be realistic. We all thought, even if you're not really in the women's game like that, that USA would probably win it before a ball was even kicked. So there was no real surprise there. France-USA was a good game. England and USA was a decent game, filled with drama and that. But some of the games, a couple of games I watched were really a struggle to watch. In regards to Copa America, too many goalless draws, quite a few penalty shootouts. So if you like a bit of drama, that was your thing. But as it went on, you could see that Brazil didn't really wow me, but they were solid. They were solid. Alisson reliable when he was called upon. I know a lot of people were coming in here on Thiago Silva fans, but he did okay. In there, Brazil was solid, and at the end of the day, I wasn't wowed by France in the 2018 World Cup, but they were solid and they came through and got the job done. African nations as well, there's been quite a few goalless draws, some decent approach play, but some of the finishes have been woeful. Ghana pissed me off, and I've been living in denial, but the last 5 years, the decline since they last qualified for a World Cup, the decline, obviously some of it is due down to politics, has been poor, it's just not good enough anymore, and I've just had to accept it that they're poor. I've been fighting it. I knew, coach warned me, said don't expect anything. I tried to be jubilant, but just not good enough at the end of the day. They were lucky to get to penalties against Tunisia, because Tunisia were the better team in that game, though Ghana had a goal harshly ruled out, and probably the right decision in the end, but ruled out in the first half. And Algeria, I think overall, have been the best team in the competition, and they're probably going to win it now, because Koulibaly's out for Senegal, so unless a super show for Mane, which could steal him the Ballon d'Or, though I think that he'll probably be overlooked, but should be able to get himself on the podium, because he's had a stellar year. I'll tell you, stellar year. He's had a brilliant year. So I think Algeria will probably win it now. The best tournament, but obviously that finished a couple of weeks ago now, over the summer, has probably been the under-21s. Spain won the tournament. Germany entertained. Romania were really entertaining. Italy were good. That was probably the tournament I enjoyed the most. The other three were a real struggle at times.
There you go. See, and I failed to mention the under-21s. Shame on me. Shame on me. It's probably because I didn't get my accreditation for that. So just blanked out my mind. I don't know. Through a hissy fit. Whatever. Anyway, let's talk about proper football now. And club football. Now, apparently, some bloke called Maguire is going to be joining Man United for around £80 million. Well, it's going to be £60 million plus £20 million add-ons, depending on what United win or whatever. So it means it's going to be just £60 million. Koja, I know you did a video for Footy Says. I haven't watched all of it, I'm not going to lie. But how do you feel about Harry Maguire possibly joining United? Obviously, we've said that United needed a central defender, a decent one at that, because what we've got at the moment is dog shit. Are you happy to see him join United?
I was going to say he wasn't my first choice, but I don't really know who my first choice is at this point. I'm happy because, number one, we need a good defender. We signed Wan-Bissaka, who is good defensively. Going forward, he's okay. He's going to improve on that. But you need to add more to that defence, because we, for the last 6 years, have seen the worst defending. And last year, we had Lindelof had a good season. Wouldn't go any further than that, but he had a good season. But you now need to add someone that you can also rely on to be fit. I like Bailly, but again, injury prone, can't rely on him. I am not going to speak about the other two. I've done enough of that in my life. It feels like they've been there since I was born.
Well, Smalling is in his 10th year, my friend. So when you're a teenager, you know, going through puberty, Mr. Chris Smalling was Man United's next Rio Ferdinand, apparently.
Apparently so.
I don't know which Rio Ferdinand they mean, though. The one that was out for 8 months doing whatever, or...
Yeah. I think they're talking about Anton, but, you know.
Oh! Don't say that. Come on, you might upset another podcast.
Ban them. If they like Anton, you know. But overall, I'm happy that we just get a defender that can actually defend. People are talking about You know, when a player's going to a big club and they're suddenly trying to find all these faults in the player, he's not good at this, not, that's, it's BS. He's not quick. He's not the quickest player, but positionally wise, he's good. And that makes up for his lack of pace. And that's why I'm happy with that. I need someone that can defend. That's all we need. We need someone that can defend, someone that De Gea can look at and say, I trust you to be in front of me. And someone that our midfield, even though midfield needs to be improved, at least he can look behind and say, I can trust these two guys behind me. So, I'm good with the signing. The fee's big, but again, the club's being poorly run, so clubs know they can take the most money out of us and we need a defender. So bring him in. If you have to spend the money, spend the money. If he works well and we improve, then you can go elsewhere and say, I want this guy and not be in such a weak position. Just get the guy in. Get the guy in. I need him in the team anyway.
Mm. Well, I don't know if United signing him. I think I'll be left with egg on my face because last season I was saying, you know, he drinks Carlsberg from like a dog bowl, you know, and he's proper like Brexit footballer. And here we go. He's going to be joining United, you know. Fucking hell. Tub thumping. All that. Is it like Jordan Pickford tub thumping all over again, you know? Fuck's sake. Connor, you guys sold a fairly decent central defender to Liverpool for just under £80 million and he did pretty well at Anfield. In fact, he's still doing well at Anfield. Can Maguire have a similar impact at United or is he just another central defender to plug the gap?
I don't think he's just another central defender, but I don't think he can be the same influential character that Van Dijk is. Van Dijk is an anomaly, isn't he? I mean, I'm not going to rave about him as much as Liverpool fans on Twitter do, but he is fantastic. And I think he set the bar and you can't live up to that bar all the time. There's nothing wrong with signing a player who just makes your team better, is there? And Maguire will make Manchester United better because he's better than what you've got, largely. So, and like Kojo touched on, he's not the quickest, but doesn't have to be, you know, he's a defender first and foremost. It's people need to stop looking for the ultimate FIFA defender and just realise that better players make teams better, and that's what United need at the moment, don't they?
Yeah, no. I don't know what to say anymore because what I keep on saying, it feels like I'm repeating myself. That's the thing. Like, you're sitting there, you're thinking, right, let me think of Man United's back four for next season. I mean, the past three or four seasons, it's been Valencia at right back or Ashley Young at right back. We're thinking, shit, we haven't signed a right back forever, you know? Our left back is Luke Shaw. The last left back we signed before him was Butner, for fuck's sake, you know?
And then I mentioned in the WhatsApp group, everyone goes on about the money. And, like, we sold Van Dijk for $75 million. Maguire's going to go for 80. I don't understand how you can strictly value a player because the value of the player is surely determined by how much he impacts the team he's currently at. Because to Leicester, he's worth 80 million. But if he was playing for, say, Tottenham, I don't think he'd be worth 80 million to Tottenham, would he? Because he's not their standout centre-back. So I think that's another thing. Not just Man United fans, but I think all fans need to stop worrying about the fees because some people will say, oh, yeah, he's great in the dressing room. So what? Say Pogba's friends with three people in the Man United dressing room. That adds £10 million to his bloody transfer fee, does it? But then Valencia's only friends with one person, so he's only an extra £3 million because he's not as much of a nice bloke. You can't put a value on things like that, and that's clearly quite an influential thing. It's something especially Manchester United probably need is good people in the dressing room. So don't worry about the fee. Just worry about him being better than Smalling and Jones.
Mm. I mean, I remember when Alex Ferguson always used to sign players and he'd say he'd look at their personality, their character, how they're like off the field, how they behave. And that's how he'd judge them. Not just obviously because of the footballing ability, but what they're like as a person. So, you know, it just seems like what you're saying about Paul Pogba is that what? Because he can make friends? That means he's worth an extra 10, 20 million pounds. That's perfect, isn't it? Don't you think, Dee? I mean, let's be honest. If Liverpool go to sign a player this summer, surely he's got to be based on whether he can fill in at left back if need be, or whether he's like James Milner that can play in any single fucking position, or maybe he's just good at making friends. What about that?
Making friends is the most important thing in football, didn't you know?
Well, you lot are going to be coming out onto the pitch. They're not going to be playing "You'll Never Walk Alone." They'll be playing the Friends theme tune, won't they?
Connor summed it up perfectly. To Leicester City, he's indispensable, but because he's going to push it through now with the transfer request said earlier, it changes the value of things. Obviously, he'll break the record spent by Liverpool for Van Dijk. Goodness me, getting tongue twisted there. But that will be broken soon anyway. Someone will go. If De Ligt had come to the Premier League, he would have broke it. And though he's only 19, no one would have really said as much about it. They would have just waited at his age, but they knew the talent was there. As coach has said, Maguire is a good player. He's a good passer. He can carry the ball out of defence. He's good in the air. But basically, he will improve them. So we can sit there and we can, whether we support United or not, can cuss about the price. But at the end of the day, if he makes them better, that's the case. In regards to us, in terms of signing people, as you said, different variables come into place. We've let Moreno go on the free now. We've let Sturridge go on the free. It looks like we're going to give Brewster a go up front, but we still need a backup left back. They were linking us to Junior Firpo, but his release clause is like 40 million. So we're not going to give Betis 40 million for someone that would be our backup left back. But to Betis, he is worth that and might go on to be worth more than that. So the price thing is just, those things are more blown out of proportion because of social media. Stoll said in the WhatsApp group earlier, he remembers a lot of people said things about Andy Cole's price, but Andy Cole, a couple seasons earlier, had scored because obviously back then the Premier League was a 42-game season. He banged in, 40 goals or something stupid like that. So, it turned out to be peanuts in the end in terms of what he did for United, even before the partnership with Dwight York. So, the price thing, forget about it. It plays different for different teams. Like, I remember cussing when we got Ox from Arsenal because I didn't like the price, but Ox went on when he was fit to get a bag of assists for us, and I reckon if we had him last season, he would have probably helped to get us that one or two extra points we needed to get over the line against to beat Man City to the title. So the main thing is improvement first and foremost, and let's think about it. When it comes to money, regardless of what the Glazers have clocked up, whatever debt they've clocked up with United, in terms of buying them with a loan and whatever other bad business they've done, overall United, Barca, Real, they make the most money. So Man United can go out and buy these players and it doesn't affect the transfer budget in any way. If it improves the team, do it.
Yeah, but you know what? There's two points I'd like to make. The first one is that I think, for me, I'm just more pissed off that we could get a better central defender for much, much cheaper, as in Toby Alderweireld, because apparently Roma are after him now. And if he's willing to go to Roma, why is he not willing to join United? He would join United. And the second thing, I think, what goes back to what you're saying about transfer fees, I think these days we're actually seeing more and more big money flops than we used to, like your Andy Carrolls, your Torres and all these other ones, and they become magnified. People want to talk about the cheap signings. Obviously, you want to talk about your Robertsons and all these other footballers that have come in for less than £10 million, which is great because that doesn't happen as frequently as what it used to. But everyone seems to see whenever there's a big fee for a player, oh, he's going to be a waste of money. Like Sergei Rebrov was £11 million and he was a waste of money. All right, fine. Well, Chris Armstrong was £4.5 million and he was a waste of money. So you could it doesn't matter for me. I've always said this. A player's value is the player's worth as much as a team is willing to spend on him. That's the way I see it. If a team wants to spend £80 million on a player, that's how much they value him at. Because if they didn't value him at that fee, then they wouldn't pay it. It's that simple.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. But for me, again, it's just more frustrating because I think right now United are in a big transition. In fact, I wouldn't say it's a transition. I think it's a massive rebuild. And we're in a situation where we need to sell before we can buy. But the shit that we have, no one wants to buy. But then again, Steve Bruce is about to join Newcastle, which we're going to talk about in a bit. So hopefully he'll buy some of our cast-offs like what he did at Sunderland. But speaking of cast-offs, can we talk about Fabian Delph's move to Everton? Apparently he's joined them for like £9 million. Have you guys seen the welcome video from Everton?
No, I haven't. I saw you tweet about it, but I didn't watch it. Something about Jigsaw.
Oh, okay. Well, you've seen Saw, haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay, let me just try and find that video, because they've done this, you know, obviously welcome to the Everton or whatever. You know what they normally do on social media. But there's like, I'll have to find it for you. Anyway, just give me 2 seconds, because my computer's a bit slow at the moment. I'm going to try and... Right. Hang about. Let's just hope this works and the audio gets picked up. Oh, perfect. It's not letting me do it. Huh, wonderful. Isn't that great? I don't think I'm even going to edit this bit out, to be fair. Oh, wait. Hang about. No, it's not letting me do it now. Oh, for the love of... Well, I'm just going to get the audio and put it in the actual... Oh, no, I'm not.
Coming to Everton is a massive opportunity that I couldn't refuse. The history and ambition drew me here. And I know what it takes to succeed. I'm here to achieve something special.
Hold on a second. He says he knows what it takes to be successful. I mean, what kind of a contribution did he make at Man City apart from coming off the bench every now and again?
That might be a tad harsh, because he did play a fair few games at fullback, didn't he? I mean, I guess he's just being around success, isn't it? He's...
Okay.
And I think...
So could David May...
Southgate's a big fan of him, isn't he?
Could David May do a video like that?
They could do what they want. They can do what they want. I don't give a shit, if I'm perfectly honest. It's Fabian Delph.
D, is he going to improve Everton in any way, shape or form? Is D still there?
Oh, sorry, goodness me. I didn't hear you say D. I thought you were still talking to Connor. Apologies. Will he improve Everton? I find it a bit of an odd one. I saw that they were interested last week. 8 million, if it turns out to do the job, as you were just saying earlier in regards to us getting Robertson, if it turns out he does the job, then 8 million will be looked at as a bargain. But considering his versatility, I was actually so kind of surprised Man City let him go, and the fact that he would have an English player as well, so counting towards homegrown and all this business in regards to the Champions League, because Everton just bought Andre Gomes permanently. Tom Davis is still there, Schneiderlin, Guaya. So I'm thinking that, like, what, he's going to back up Dean at left back? No, because Leighton Baines was given a new 1 year deal. So I'm thinking he would have probably played, he's probably going to play a few more games than if he stayed at Manchester City, unless obviously Marco Silva sees him at that guy. So I would have thought that one of the teams that have come up, or one of the other mid table teams, would have looked to get Fabian Delph in. But it's an interesting side of the story. We'll see how it goes.
Fabian Dolphin, like Flipper.
But to be honest, overall, if you, obviously back when he was at Leeds, and obviously I know some of us in here and a lot of the listeners would have played manager games and that back in the day, considering what, I know he did pick up an injury, but considering what he was gassed up to be, Dolph has not quite been the midfielder that they were talking about when he was like a 19, 20, 21 year old.
No, I agree. But again, that tends to happen a lot these days. You know, you hear about these wonder kids and they don't really end up being what they're tipped to be anyway. I mean, James Milner's had a decent career though, and he was very young when he made his debut.
Yep. Leonard and Milner made their debuts at 16, didn't they?
That's right. I think Milner was a striker and he scored on his debut against Sunderland.
Yep.
There you go. See, shows our age, mate. speaking of youngsters, Tierney of Celtic. Apparently, Arsenal have had a £25 million bid rejected. I don't know too much about this player, Con. I've seen him play a few times. I don't know if he'll improve Arsenal down that left-hand side. He seems to have more of an end product than Kolasinac. But is he the player that they need to kick forward? I don't know.
I think it's kind of a telling statement of where Arsenal are at the moment, isn't it? I mean, don't get me wrong, he could end up being fantastic. I mean, as a Southampton fan, we've had our fair share of Celtic players come down and perform for us, with Van Dijk being the main one, and Wanyama, Fraser Forster. So for all we know, he could have the talent, the mentality to kick on and be a top-end Premier League player. But you have to remember, Arsenal are a sixth place team now. So that's the kind of signings they're going to be making. They're only going to be a small step above your Everton's, your Wolves. So it's probably a good sign of him. He's young. He's going to be better than Monreal and Kolasinac, as you pointed out. So we can only see. And as with everything, there's always politics to it, isn't it? There's a British quota all these teams have to fill. And they've lost Aaron Ramsey. They've lost Danny Welbeck. So that's probably got a bit of a part to play in it.
No, absolutely. It goes back to what I said about, you know, a player is only worth as much as a club is willing to spend on him. And D, if Arsenal are willing to spend £25 million on Kieran Tierney, I believe that's his first name, surely they can find a more established left back for that price?
Again, Connor's hit the nail on the head. That it sums up where they're at right now. If it's true, the talk of their budget being around 40, 50 million, then these are the type of players they're going to have to target. And even then, Celtic have been disappointed with the package because I think they're trying to spread the payment over 2 years or something like that. And I know Napoli are sniffing about. So if Arsenal continue to do this and don't negotiate well with these teams, they'll lose out on their targets because I know Tottenham are trying to get Saliba in also. So they need to... This is where they're at. Unless they're going to sell some people to try and raise their more funds, these are the type of signings that they're going to have to make. And this is why the fans are not too optimistic about it all when they're coming for Kroenke's neck again, because Arsenal move stadium. They move to the Emirates to continue on Champions League qualification, but to mix it with the higher echelon teams business-wise. And it's not gone like that. And obviously, back-to-back seasons being out. Sorry, this is going to be their third, actually. Their third consecutive season not being in the Champions League is having a huge effect on their budget, a huge effect on the club all around. And that's what you get sometimes. Maybe it's complacency, naivety, entitlement. But when you think, yeah, you're definitely going to have the Champions League money coming in, then it stops. It completely messes up the business model. And this is the state that they're in at the moment. So yeah, I think some fans...
Yeah, but don't forget... Arsenal could be in a better financial situation. Let's be honest. They qualified for, what, 19, 20 Champions League campaigns in a row? That money's there. But they haven't done what Man United have done and taken advantage of their big fan base and gone for pure commercial stuff and merchandise and whatnot. They haven't been savvy in that industry. And this is the problem. The Arsenal fans can't turn around and say, you know, Stan Kroenke hasn't put money in his pocket, because... He has, okay, he hasn't put as much as City and United and whatnot, but there's something called FFP. There's player amortization. There's all these different rules that you have to abide by, but Arsenal aren't bringing in that commercial revenue. Now, if Gazidis was doing his job, then they would have mattress partners like United. They would have noodle partners. They would have so many, like, I mean, you go on Man United's commercial page with all the partners and all that. There's a shit ton of them. Yeah. We're talking about telecommunications partners in Azerbaijan and all these obscure places, but they're still bringing in that money from somewhere, because they know that if they don't qualify for the Champions League, they're going to need to bring in some money from somewhere, and that's how they do it. Arsenal haven't been doing it, or they have been doing it, but not as much as United. So, yeah, they can blame Stan Kroenke for using the company or the club as a business. But effectively, that's what every owner is there for, aren't they not? I mean, Abramovich, I don't think Abramovich was spunking money at Chelsea because, you know, he felt, well, it's a toy. He wanted to make money from it in the long term and boost his profile. He's always got an ulterior motive. So I don't get it. I understand. I can feel Arsenal fans' pain because we're in that same situation. And I know that they moved to the stadium to compete and they haven't competed and whatnot. But at the same time, for crying out loud, like, you got to think of it. It's a business at the end of the day. It's a business.
Yeah, exactly. And as you said about, like, the commercial partnerships and that, we're the same. Regardless of what some idiot Liverpool fans say on Twitter, FSG have got, we've got deals, Dunkin' Donuts, Vauxhall, you've got the Crawley Nivea adverts, there's investment from LeBron James, there's so many varying things that Liverpool are connected to now, and it keeps. We've still got some form of connection with Carlsberg, even though obviously Standard Chartered's on the shirts now and that, and this, the money is still ticking over. And then obviously we've got Michael Edwards pulling strings as a director, making great sales. And as you said, they've got Adrian now, but it's still going to take time. He's not going to immediately come in the role. You're going to see changes. There's talk of them maybe getting Everton today, who did quite well for Brazil in the Copa America in terms of the players, but we'll see. So he might make a difference player size, but we'll see commercially with Sol, Raul, Salehi and all the others in there, what Arsenal can do to get more money in, because otherwise it might be another season outside of the top four, and then you're just going to see more fans whinging and talking about striking and all that. It's not all about, yes, obviously football, your accreditation actually comes from winning trophies, but there's so much more needed to survive in modern football nowadays, and they've seen it. They seem to have seen it slower than other teams, unfortunately.
I'll give you a rough idea of the difference between United and Arsenal. Arsenal, on their official website, they have 18 commercial partners. Man United have over 25. Over 25. And I haven't even counted them. I haven't even counted all of them. It's ridiculous. We're talking about wine partners, spirits partners, music partners. And I know, obviously, United are a bigger club from a global scale. But it goes back to having the right people at the club that can bring in those commercial partners. That's the thing. I wouldn't pin all the blame on Kroenke. Granted, he's the owner of the club and he makes the big decisions. But don't they have some shareholders there that have a say? So, end of the day, don't just pin all the blame on Stan Kroenke. You know, he isn't the man making every single decision. Who employed Gazidis? Who was the guy that earmarked him as the guy? I don't know. These are the questions that we need to be asking these Arsenal fans that claim to be, you know, so anti-Kroenke. But who's the guy that brought in Gazidis that was meant to be getting these deals? I mean, United are getting deals with Muajim, which is like a vision partner. And they've got, hotel loyalty partner, a coffee partner, global mattress and pillow partner. This is ridiculous, but they're making that money in from a commercial aspect. Arsenal aren't doing that, so until they're able to do that and bring in all of these commercial partners, then they can balance the books and say, yeah, we're going to spend £80 million on a player. They can do it. They've spent big on players, but they're not doing it enough, and they're not doing it like United are doing, and they're not doing it like Liverpool are doing it. And I think this is what's great in Arsenal fans the most, not the fact that they're not competing. I think it's because they're not bringing in big players.
Yeah, but this is the thing again. You have to know where you're at. Like when the Premier League season finished, they were immediately being linked to Ryan Fraser, and fans were turning their nose up at that. But
no, they're getting at stats. They're getting stats about his assists.
but he was getting assists.
That guy that had the assist handle, he changed it to phrasist.
Oh God, where can we come? So it's one. It's I don't know, man. Their fans are unbearable, but I think there are a lot of them that do talk sense, but there's so many of them on social media that they get drowned out by all the ones that just chat fart. But yeah, for me, this is what happens, man. From the fans' point, not even just from the business model point of view, when you look at the fans as well, all this talking about repeatedly qualifying for the Champions League, even though it was only the one final they made in 20 years, and all this talk, and now they don't know how to deal with themselves because they've always thought they're above their station. They were convinced they were going to beat Chelsea in the final. They were convinced they were the best team in the Europa League, though Chelsea came over them domestically. And look at what's happened now. From entertainment value, not to sound bad, man, I'm cool for it, because when AF TV comes on, I get the popcorn out and I'm ready, mate. My evening is set up nicely.
True. Connor, let's move on quickly while we're on the subject of Arsenal. I don't know if you've seen this petition with the hashtag #WeCareDoYou. First of all, have you seen it? And secondly, what do you make of this attempt to, I don't know, get Stan Kroenke talking? Apparently 67,000 people have already signed this online petition to get Stan Kroenke to say something, I guess. I don't know. Answer our question, Stan.
I've seen it, I've read it, and I listened to, obviously, a mutual friend of ours, Harry Simeu, on TalkSport 2 earlier. And I guess the intent is good, and it's a peaceful way to go about it, but it's just like, oh, I don't know how to say it without sounding offensive, especially to us as we do what we do, but it's just another blog, isn't it? That they're just not going to read, and they're just going to go, whatever, or they'll send out a little message. We acknowledge it, we'll think about it. Like, fuck, will they? Like, fuck, will they? It'll be straight back to the LA Rams, whatever he's doing. Spunking money over there to make more. I mean, ultimately, and as Harry alluded to on the radio earlier, the only way football owners are going to care is if they don't make money. Because as you said it about 5 minutes ago, it's a business. So affect the business, ruin the business. And that's the only way you're going to force change. But then you have to accept there will be detrimental effects to what you enjoy that come with that. And I think it's a fine line to tread. It's a dangerous line to tread.
Do you remember a couple of seasons ago when they played Man City and then they had that mass walkout? The weather was really bad and not many people turned up anyway, and then people started walking out of protest. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that, no.
Do you remember that? A couple of seasons ago, weather was really bad.
Yeah, really bad. And then the fans, I remember.
And then people started walking out, and I'm thinking, all right, I understand you want to get home and weather's pretty shitty, but you walking out doesn't prove anything because you've paid for your seats anyway. Now, I understand the argument whereby, you know, if I don't renew my season ticket, I'm making a stand, but at the same time, someone else is going to get my season ticket. I get that. But at the same time, if you feel so strongly about the ownership, and listen, I'm not, you know, acting all high and mighty, but I was pissed off with the Glazers, so I didn't renew. I haven't been to Old Trafford for 9 years, approaching 10 years now. And I'm not going to go back while they're there because I know every penny that I spend is going to go in their pockets. And they're just using United as, you know, a way to siphon money. But that's another story for another time. But, you know, this petition, I read this paragraph. It said, what all of us as signatories to this statement want to see is meaningful action by Stan Kroenke to, right, and this is the word that killed it, reinvigorate our football club. Now, whenever I hear that word, I think of what, you changing a fabric softener or something. You're just going to change the smell of your clothes. I don't understand. Like, you know, okay, I get the whole point, and I know that they're saying, you know, that the club needs better leadership, and we want a clear sense of purpose and direction. But you know what the direction is. You know what the owner wants. So why are you asking questions that you're going to get you already know the answer to? Why are you asking rhetorical questions? I don't understand. They're saying the club uses a strap line always ahead of the game. It would be good to see action to demonstrate this. No, always ahead of the game is linked with the Adidas marketing drive that they've been doing for the past year. These are taglines that are linked with the manufacturer. It's co-branding. That's what it's about. Do these people not understand marketing? You know, and then they're using taglines. The very fabric of football in England across Europe is a threat from proposals for a European Super League. What has that got to do with anything? They've never spoken about a potential Super League and Kroenke in the past. Why now? They're just adding bits to it to add content. That's all it is, to get more people riled up. And to be fair, if there was a European Super League, Arsenal fans would absolutely love it because they wouldn't be getting dicked by Bolton every fucking week.
Well, would they even be in it?
Well, they would be. They would be because of the revenue that they generate.
I'm glad Connor said it, boy.
But this is what I'm saying. A lot of these teams, I mean, I'm sure you've read articles that the teams that are going to qualify for this Super League, apparently, is going to be based a lot on their revenue, how much they bring in. And Arsenal are a big draw. They do bring in money, and they've got a massive fan base, so automatically they'll be in it because of their stature. That's what it is. So when I see all of these things that, oh, you know, these moves are driven by the greed of a few so-called elite clubs who want guaranteed entry into top-level European competition every year. What, you don't see yourselves as an elite club?
Yeah, it's, well, you know, it depends what the definition of the term elite means. As you say, it seems to be elite levels of money, when that doesn't necessarily mean an elite club. Because one of the richest clubs in the Premier League by ownership is Bournemouth. Telling me they're an elite club?
No, they've got a massive Russian financial backer.
Yeah, so it depends how you define the term elite, doesn't it?
No, I just love the way they use the word, the greed of a few so-called elite clubs. Well, hang about, this is the club that bought Anelka for $500,000 and sold him for 23. So if they were such a charitable club and didn't care about money, surely they should have sold him for at least £1 million, or maybe £1.5 million, or maybe £1.1 million and £1. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, and they wouldn't charge the equivalent of a week in a all-inclusive for a season ticket.
There you go. Which they've been doing for a very long time. So again, it just seems to me you've got a lot of butthurt fans that just don't like what's going on at the moment, and they're just coming up with any nonsensical addition to this petition to get more people riled up. Look, again, I'm not trying to be a hypocrite here, because United fans are doing the same with the whole Glazers out movement, but the difference is the Glazers have actually taken out more money from United than what Arsenal are worth as a club in general.
Yeah, I know you two support the bigger teams in the league, and it's painful to watch all this stuff going on, because let's be honest, the fall from grace Arsenal have had isn't as big as the fall from grace Man United have had, and it's Man United have had it in a shorter space of time. You know, you think about, and they will back me up here, the fall from grace Liverpool had from, but that was over a very long period of time, but they had a very long period where they were nowhere near. And you know, I'm a Southampton fan, I'm like, what the shit in hell?
You're a Southampton fan. You're a Southampton fan, and your club changed stadiums so you could compete in some way, right? You didn't just change grounds because, you know, you felt it was the fashionable thing to do, because Derby had a Legoland stadium and then the Middlesbrough stadium was exactly the same as Pride Park, but you wanted a similar... No, you built St Mary's because you wanted more revenue. You wanted it to be a more, attractive club to join, because you got a big stadium, new facilities and whatnot, and you're keeping up with the times. That's what teams are doing. So this argument is nonsensical when it comes to this whole, greedy clubs and whatnot. Every club is greedy. Every club.
That's it. I mean, I don't think you could find a team in the whole of the football pyramid, probably even the world, who would pass up an opportunity to earn more money. No one would go, no, don't worry about it. It's all right. We're happy as we are. Forest Green Rovers are probably the most likely. That's because they'd rather put it into making new cow shit or whatever they do. But
I mean, look, the signatories, right, of this petition are my Arsenal. Oh, sorry, you are my Arsenal blog. 7 a.m. kickoff. Le Grove, Gunner blog, Gunner's Town, Goonaholic, Gooner fanzine, Hugh Wizzy, Arse blog. These are all bloggers. These are all social media influencers, so to speak. You mean to tell me that they're not trying to boost their profile by getting involved in this? I don't know. I'm just saying. Are they not being greedy, you know? Trying to get their own little stranglehold on a little niche here, because Arsenal Fan TV have kind of monopolised everything? I don't know. It's just, you know, I don't know. Maybe some people want to get famous. I don't know. Well, I might be wrong.
You might be rubbing some people up the wrong way.
Like who? Who could I be rubbing up the wrong way? You know, I don't see any deluded people named on this, so I think you're right. You know?
Oh, he's a prick anyway.
I don't know who you're talking about. I'm not getting involved. I'm not getting involved in that energy right now.
Block me for no reason.
I just drop that grenade and walk out of the room. But no. But the thing is, when I see Harry going on these football shows, you could tell he actually knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? A lot of these guys just rant and rave and say whatever they need to, but Harry is very meticulous in what he's saying. And I'm not just saying this because he's a mate and whatever, but you know what he's like. He's very calculated what he says. He knows what he's saying. Yeah. And the thing is, because he says it how it is, a lot of people getting his back, and they're saying, well, you know, you're not a true Arsenal fan because it's not.
Yep.
Well, no, he is a true Arsenal fan because he reads up on the facts and he tells people like it is. And this is the problem. People don't want to see it as black and white. They want a lovely little grey area so they can sit on the fence and just jump on any kind of bandwagon that comes along because it makes them look popular by doing it, you know. So one minute it's Wenger out, the next minute it's, oh, wait, hang about, Wenger back in because Emery isn't good enough. Make your fucking mind up. You get what you deserve, Arsenal. You get what you deserve.
Yep.
Anyway,
yep.
Speaking of getting what they deserve, Newcastle United. Steve Bruce, eh?
Oh, God.
Thoughts, please. This is beautiful.
I've had my rant today about this.
Come on. I haven't heard it.
Well, it's just the most uninspiring thing I've heard since, fuck no, Songs of Praise.
What's inspiring about Newcastle? Look at their kit.
I don't know. There's a charm about them, isn't there?
And you've got charm.
You've got the fan base, but I just think they deserve everyone. Well, no one deserves Steve Bruce. No one. I just think there's some real mismanagement going on, as we all know. Well, everyone knows there's mismanagement going on, sorry, but who decided to recruit Steve Bruce? And I tweeted it earlier that, so what you're getting with Steve Bruce, you're getting, we'll call it pragmatic to be kind, football. It's going to be pretty safe. He's going to stick to his principles, nothing too jazzy, not going to get you off your seat. And he might keep you up. You're probably going to finish, what, at best 15th? There's rumours he's going to be the lowest paid Premier League boss in the league, but I doubt that is strictly true. So your options then, do you go pragmatic and safe? In my head, I go Claude Puel, who you'd be nowhere near relegation with him, would you? But
no.
you'd be bored shitless the whole season. Or do you go young, inexperienced, a bit more expansive? I can't bring any names off the top of my head because it's 10 past 11.
What about Kike Sanchez Flores?
Yeah, go for him just for argument's sake. Someone who might keep you up, he might not. You'd never know, but you're going to have some fun along the way. But with Steve Bruce, you're getting the bad aspects of both of those. You're getting boring, uninspiring football, and he's probably going to take you down as well. So, you know, go one way or the other. It's just such a vanilla appointment. It's painful.
Mm. Well, the thing is, what I've noticed with Mike Ashley is that it just seems to me that he's come to a point where he literally doesn't give a shit about what the fans think. You know, if you think about it, I mean, I can't remember his first managerial appointment. My guess is Glenn Rhoda. Possibly, or was it Allardyce? I can't remember which one was his first managerial appointment. But the fans didn't like the manager. I know they didn't like Sam Allardyce, so they got rid of him. So he brought back Kevin Keegan. And then things weren't going great, so he brought in Chris Hughton. He got them... Didn't he get them promoted? He won the championship, didn't he? He won the championship,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, he won the championship, smashed up the points and goals record, yep, or something like that in the division, and then had a bad start to the Premier season, and then they... axed him.
That's right. Fans, yeah, they axed him.
Yeah.
Right.
Fans were mad, but then Pardew got them.
No. It was Shearer. It was Shearer. Do you remember?
Was it Shearer before Pardew? Oh yeah, of course it was.
Yeah. Shearer. Of
course it was. Shearer flopped.
Yeah.
Kevin Keegan was his first appointment.
Kevin Keegan. Well, there you go. Kevin Keegan. So Chris Hughton, and then Alan Pardew came in. He gave him that 8-year contract, and the fans didn't like it, and fans were pissed off. And I remember they had Pardew out banners at Stoke. I remember that. And then they won on a great unbeaten streak. That's when he gave him the new contract. Then he sacked him, and the fans were obviously happy about that. They brought in John Carver for a bit. Remember that?
Yeah, John Carver that said he's the best manager in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's right.
He's the best manager
right.
in the world or whatever.
That's right. And then he flopped. So they brought in Steve McLaren and the fans were pissed off. So he sacked him and he brought in Benitez. So he's got this love-hate relationship with the fans, you know, bring in a new manager, appease the fans, then they turn on him and then he sacks the manager. They bring in another one, he appeases the fans, pacifies them, right? And now he's come to a point where he's like, oh, fuck this shit, man. Like, let me just bring in Steve Bruce. You know, he's a Geordie. I mean, obviously the fans might like him, but then again, there's the Sunderland link. And then as you said, the pragmatic, putting it nicely, approach. I think he's just come to a point, he's like, fuck this, you lot don't appreciate me, so yeah, I'm going to just do whatever I want. And he's just doing it to troll the fans now. That's what I think he's doing. honestly don't think that's what he's doing.
That could be a distinct possibility, because it's like it's pie in the face, isn't it? It's like, yeah, I'm still here. I've not sold up. So whether you support us or not, I'm still going to get money.
I think personally that he honestly believes that there are three worse teams than Newcastle in the league, and he's just bringing in this guy because he knows he'll steady the ship. Or well, not that the ship needs steadying, but he'll keep them up. You know, because I think if Leeds came up instead of Sheffield United, he'd have probably brought in a decent manager. He's thinking, well, Sheffield United is one team that will probably go down. He's probably thinking Norwich City's one team will go down. Then possibly Brighton or another one of those teams. And then, he's safe with Steve Bruce. Then in comes the revenue, the TV revenue money. So what does he care? What does he care?
There you go. That's exactly it. I think that's how he's looked at it and played it. And thought, you know what? If I thought these teams, there were quite a few teams that could stay up, I might have to go out and try and squeeze someone in. But because they haven't, like, as we spoke briefly about earlier, and I bought a piece out because he got the job at Doncaster Rovers last week, whether it would have been a rolling contract or not, they could have looked at Darren Moore. I'm still surprised, unless teams have tried to talk to him, but he said he doesn't want to manage again, why no one has vigorously tried to get Frank Rijkaard out of retirement, a man who's won leagues and Champions Leagues. But they've just gone to the recycle bin, that recycle bin of Bruce.
Raggy dolls, mate. They've gone to the raggy doll bin. Reject bin.
Raggy dolls. Of Bruce, they've already had Pardew, Kerbishley, they've already had Allardyce, all those same guys. Harry did say in the group a couple of weeks ago, Kike Sanchez Flores would have been a decent shout. I would have gone for it. I'm not sure why at first, though he went down day by day, Mikel Arteta was quite high on that list. They obviously, some bookies thought the takeover would come in, so they were linking the likes of Mourinho and Wenger to them. But Newcastle fans, if they buy their tickets, as we've said earlier, we've asked, it won't make a difference, but you might see some of them not try and come to games and whatnot. Because, look, regardless of how much they've not won anything recently, they've got a loyal fan base. If a coach was to come in and get them going again, tickle around the European places like Pardew did, though that was off of the back of really having the greatest season of his life, then things could be different. But I just don't see how it's going to grow there. And you've seen the effect from Rafa leaving. Rafa goes, Jose Perez goes to Leicester, their top scorer. Rondon was their second top scorer. I've got a bag of assists for them. He's going to go and join Rafa in China. So you're just looking at it. Yeah, they've got Dwight Hill back because West Brom didn't keep him because he got sent off against Villa in the playoffs, and it looks like they're pinning that on him, the fact that they've not come up. What is there? They already had a bag of championship players at the squad with Rafa there. Now he's gone and you've got people leaving. I don't know how at the most they finish higher than 17th. If they do something wild or they have a run at a stage where they get games, like, who's going to get the goals for them? Who? Who's going to even want to go there now to replace Perez? Like, it's just a mess, and I feel sorry for their fans.
I don't, but anyway. Sorry. Well, look, you mentioned Darren Moore, and obviously he's got the Doncaster job. I don't know if you've seen Brian Dean's tweets. Brian Dean, formerly of Sheffield United and Leeds, and obviously a friend of the show. He put out a few tweets beginning of June about the lack of black managers in the game, and you're saying, you know, how about if you go spend 2 years managing in the top flight in Norway and come back and can't get an interview? How does that work for you? Now, that's obviously his experiences. You know, he also said stuff like, you know, getting an interview is a good thing. It's better than going in blind, not knowing what to expect. Small strides and understanding the interview process will help to make the candidate more equipped to present himself. So he's obviously making some points about management. He can't get into the game and whatnot. So he went out and became the owner of a club in Kosovo.
Okay.
So Brian Dean is the owner of a club known as... Where is it? I had it here a minute ago. Oh, for crying out loud. See, my researching skills are absolute dog turd today. You know? I'd like to blame the weather, but the weather's been shit, to be fair. But, so he's the owner of some team in Kosovo at the moment, he decided, fuck it, you know, I'm not going to be a manager, so I just own the club myself and employ someone. So, yeah, good on him. And I hope it goes well because, you know, it's a very obscure league, I guess. Not many people know too much about it, but it's a new adventure. It's a new challenge. Connor, have you heard anything like that before in your life?
No, I mean, do what you've got to do. No one's going to let you in their house. Build your own, I guess.
That simple, isn't it? That simple. That simple. D, do you think he'll employ a black manager in Kosovo?
Sorry, do what?
Do you think he'll employ a black manager in Kosovo?
Oh, do you think he'll employ a black manager? I think he'll try and interview some, but he might not be able. I don't think Kosovo will be the most attractive option for some of them there. I'm sure that if they were to go, then their family might not all go with them, so they might only do maybe a 6 month or a year stint over there. But I think he'll try his damnedest in regard to get a black manager in or a BAME manager in, just for the sheer fact of his cries. But see, you learn something every day. I did not know about him going and buying a club in Kosovo.
Yeah, but it's KF Ferizaj.
Okay. It's just all around a mess still in terms of the BAME thing, because, for instance, West Brom, it was saying we're going to interview Chris Hughton, so unless he rejected them, that job went to Slaven Bilic, and I just don't see any attempts from any club really trying to change the landscape of things in regards to BAME management. At least, I suppose, a positive I've seen within the last week. Obviously, the main thing is that Darren Moore is working again, because he shouldn't have been out of a job anyway. But Liam Rossini has joined Philip Cocu's staff at Derby, is a positive that I've seen, though he's not like the manager or the head coach or whatever. But I don't really see much change, man. I don't really see much change. I don't know when things are going to change anytime too soon. I'm just annoyed at the fact that I think Frank Lampard could have finished 10th or 12th with Derby, and just because of the fact he's a Chelsea and Premier League legend, that he would have still got the Chelsea job anyway, it was written. Sol Campbell kept Macclesfield up against all odds. You don't hear any job offers, but I strongly doubt he would like to go. If Brian Dean wanted him, I strongly doubt he would go and manage a team in Kosovo. So, yeah, your options are limited, because these clubs around Britain are not going to get you unless maybe you can slip in one of the European teams, maybe a Europa League team or something like that. So I don't see things changing any time too soon, unfortunately, for main managers. But well done, Brady, going to buy his own club. Maybe some others will go and follow suit.
Yeah, but Dee, obviously it's a mentality thing, which obviously we've spoken about on numerous occasions. But what do you think it will take for things to change? I mean, they're obviously talking about the Rooney Rule and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, it's just allowing someone to sit at the table, really. So there's no credence behind it, I don't think, anyway. What needs to be changed? Do we need to see black managers be successful in the game? Obviously, from a managerial perspective, as opposed to being a player, like Sol Campbell, for example. If Sol Campbell wins, I don't know, the LDV Vans Trophy, or what's it called now? Johnson's Paint Trophy or something? I mean, that's...
Checker Trade.
So if he wins the Checker Trade Trophy, can we say that, you know, he can be taken serious? Or does it mean that he just needs to keep plugging away and do decent or do a good job at the club he's at the moment? I don't know. What's the criteria these days? I don't know.
This is the thing, though. The criteria is different for... It's like, however we try to, people say don't draw for the race card or whatever, the criteria for a BAME manager differs from if you're a white British manager or whatever. There's a difference. So doing well, as we've seen with Darren Moore, being fourth with West Brom, they said that they thought they were in danger of being automatically promoted. They still ended up coming fourth and they got beaten in the playoffs. You have to exceed expectations, and even if you do, the slightest mistake that you make, then you might be thrown out of them. You just mentioned it going through Newcastle's manager, the fact that the points total that Chris Shuter got was a record put into Auckland Division, had some bad games in the Premier League, and then got axed. So the margin for error is smaller, unfortunately. So, you know, and I know that there's coaches coming through every day. I speak to people, obviously they're not at that level yet to be able to get a job in the Championship or League One or League Two, but I know people from being around footballers, some semi-pro guys that know coaches, agents and things as well. And I've been to events. Me and E-Man went to an event at Crystal Palace a couple of months ago. This black coach is coming through every day. So, but they're just going to get stuck. So it's going to take maybe going abroad or whatever. I don't see for now anyway, in the near future, things changing within the British game, which I'm not sure what it's going to take, to be honest, because as you said, the Rooney rule, it just gets them an interview. It doesn't mean they're going to get it. And it's like, it's not a BAME situation, but we've seen with Wales, for instance, they said Craig Bellamy gave the perfect interview. But if Craig Bellamy gave a better interview than Ryan Giggs, then why did Ryan Giggs get the job? Because he wanted it anyway. Because they wanted the Giggs anyway. Yeah. So you may get some BAME coaches that go in and give him brilliant interviews and then just sitting there all around the round table and they're thinking, nah, leave it. Let's just get this guy.
Yeah. See, the thing is, my honest opinion of this is that I think instead of trying to get a job within the UK, ply your trade abroad and go the long way around. Because let's be honest, the opportunities abroad are better and they're better paid as well. That's the way I see it, and that's from what I know talking to other people. You can get a job in North America, in the Far East, in the Middle East as a coach, get paid much better, much handsomely than in the UK, have more opportunities, and probably work with better resources as well, because these developing countries, are pumping money into the game. So you're not sitting there worried about grassroots football and saying, oh, well, you know, are there going to be any costs cut here? And, you know, are we going to be playing, you know, without any floodlights on and that kind of stuff because the team is trying to save money? You're not going to get that abroad. So perhaps it's better for these guys to go abroad. And let's be honest, if they help a team develop a group of players in a league or a nation that isn't as competitive as the Premier League or as well known as a Premier League, surely that gives them more of a feather in their cap, so to speak, because obviously they're working with more resources, so to speak, but at the same time, the player quality isn't great. So if they achieve other things, then that puts them in good stead. I don't know. I mean, we saw the fella that's a Brighton now. Potter? Wasn't he in Sweden?
Yeah, Potter, yeah.
Wasn't he in Sweden or something like that?
He was in Sweden.
He was in Sweden, yeah.
Ostersunds.
So he's gone the long way around, hasn't he?
So they beat Arsenal, didn't they, in the Europa League?
Oh, yeah. Was it the first leg they beat them? First leg? Or?
Second leg.
Second leg, yeah. There you go. So I just think it's probably better for these guys to go abroad and ply their trade there. And then take it from there. But again, you know, as I said before, the opportunities in the UK are few and far between. So, whatever, it is what it is. One more thing before we go, gents. Do you hear about Marlow versus Q8?
No.
Yeah, it happened. It happened. Non-league team Marlow faced Q8 at the weekend, and I think they lost 3-2. Yeah, they lost 3-2 to Q8, but I don't know what this game meant or how it came about. I think Q8 are playing another. I think they're playing Eversley and California FC. So they've come to the UK for a few friendlies.
Okay. Pre-season is fucking mad, isn't it?
Yeah,
Stanley beat Marseille.
Yes. I was just thinking of that.
And they had like Payet, Louis Gustavo, Calvin, they're all on there.
Did Schuttman play?
Off the top of my head, I just remember Payet and Calvin, because Calvin's been touted to go to Leicester for some silly money.
Mm.
And I just remember thinking, fuck me, can't even beat Accrington Stanley.
I think they saw Accrington shirts and thought they were playing Atletico.
Oh, bloody hell.
Give it to me.
What's the strangest pre-season game you've ever seen or ever heard of?
Nothing's coming off the top of the head. I'd have have to sit, man, and look at something. I know. Was it Everton? Someone lost to like a fourth division team or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a decent amount of players. Maybe Everton was a year or two ago, but yeah, I've just seen some. Did Arsenal draw with Bournemouth the other day?
Yeah, they drew, yeah.
Or did I see wrong?
3-3.
Oh god!
Yeah. I just like the ones when I go on like my flash score and it's like 17-0. I'm like, yes.
Championship manager pre-season games, isn't it?
Do you know what one of my pet hates is that when a team wins by like 8 goals and you don't get a hat trick, really annoys me.
Yeah.
The strikers have totally let you down there.
Yeah. I remember 1989. Arsenal played France in a friendly.
Arsenal played France, did
they? Yep.
They swapped teams at half time.
In 89?
Yeah, in 89, yeah. Yeah.
They all played for Arsenal in the first
half. I think it was a testimonial game. I think it was a testimonial. But Arsenal played France. Alan Smith scored. I remember Alan Smith scored. But France had some decent players. That Frank Sozzi, remember him? He was at Hibs. Blanc played in that. Papin played.
I'm only 25 still.
Oh, come on, man. you don't remember Laurent Blanc, for crying out loud?
No of him, but yeah, I've only been like...
Oh, man, Connor's making me feel old, mate.
Right, how about this? Here we go. Look, match report. This friendly game was arranged between George Graham and Michel Platini. Nothing dodgy there, then.
Bug baby.
The respective managers of Arsenal and France both had their own motives for the game. For the French, it was a warm-up for the forthcoming World Cup tie against Scotland, and Arsenal saw it as a chance to show themselves as ambassadors for English clubs' reintroduction into European competition. At this time, no English team could qualify for Europe due to Liverpool's involvement in the Heysel Stadium tragedy of 85, after which a blanket ban was placed upon English clubs between 85 and 90, which, might I add, it was Thatcher that pulled English clubs out. It was just UEFA that agreed to it. Yeah, there you go. And Platini had stated he wished to play Arsenal rather than Spurs due to the team's quintessential British style of play, which he believed would provide a decent test ahead of their World Cup qualifier at Hampden Park. So there you go. Platini felt that the 89 Arsenal team mirrored that of the Scotland 1990 World Cup team.
Wow.
How times have changed, eh?
Wow.
Arsenal were seen as a more British team than Spurs in 89. There you go. Interesting. And it was on Valentine's night as well. So there you go.
There you go.
Right, I'll leave you guys with that. Bit of interesting trivia there, I guess.
Yep.
Right, before I let you guys go, plug your shit.
Shit's been a common theme throughout this podcast.
Yes. Shit's on a stick podcasting. Connor?
Oh, yeah. You can find Radio Football at Radio FTBL and www.radiofootball.co.uk. I'm not producing anything this week. I have a lot of admin to do. We've got live shows starting in a couple of weeks' time. Sunday one, just with my football mates, and then a European show and Sports Stack, which are our sponsors. So have a look at those. And I am Dunford Connor on Twitter as well. I just tweet shit, really. And I got stuck in an argument with Newcastle fans today, which was nice and fun. They don't want to sign a striker because they're perfectly happy with Muto and Dwight Gale, so don't worry about it.
Oh, wow.
Perhaps they want Shane Long, I don't know.
I'm trying to fob Charlie Austin off to everyone.
Austin 316. D.
D. My handle is at double D. That's DUBULDEE. And that's me on Instagram, SoundCloud, everywhere. And I am part of the D&D Football Factory, whose at is at DD40Factory_ on Twitter, and we are on every week on Top FM 95.5 FM in London with the 40 on Top show 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
What happened at the weekend?
There was a power cut, so we were actually only on air for about an hour and a half. We lost at least half an hour. No, not even that, about an hour and 50 minutes. We lost at least half an hour to 40 minutes of the show. Just wrapping up Copa America, really. Basically, partially what we've done today.
Did you record it at least?
Wrapping up all the tournaments. The recording cut out on 12 minutes, unfortunately. I'm very annoyed. Otherwise, I would have sent that around to you. I would have sent that to Connor as well for Radio Football. So I'm fuming right now because I am not in on Saturday. I am at a wedding, which I am the best man for. I will be back on the 27th. My D-man and that will be there, but I'll be back on the 27th. So yeah, fuming about that, but such is life.
Oh dear. Well, listen, next season's going to be a big one for all of us. I know this for a fact. And really enjoy your show, mate. Really, really good stuff.
Thanks, Governor, man. Much appreciated.
No worries. Right, on a final note, follow us on Twitter at Shoot Defence. I'm knackered. It's 25 minutes to midnight. We all need our sleep, don't we? There you go. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, goodbye, motherfuckers.